This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, 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 I'll guide you home with my lighthouse.
This show has one mission: to give hope where hope is lost or fading fast. We're here for anyone that is affected by mental illness, their friends, their family, their employers, teachers, and anyone else in the community. Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempstead. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we're going to be looking at the important but very difficult topic of suicide prevention. It is a very difficult topic, but I believe this is something that every single adult needs to know about, because unfortunately, suicide can strike anywhere. I'll come to that in just a little bit. I just want to talk a little bit about last week's show. So on last week's show, we covered the interesting topic of PMDD, or premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is basically an extreme form of PMS where people can have extreme body pain and intense suicidal thoughts. I wasn't sure how this was going to go down. I was a bit uncertain of it. It turns out it's the most popular show that I have ever done. I've had a lot of emails from people asking me all sorts of different things about this. I was just amazed that so many people have suffered from this for so long and they haven't realised that, one, it's a bad thing, and two, something can be done about this. So if you do want the recording, it is available on the plainsfm.org.nz website. So plainsfm.org.nz. If you go to programs and then find Lighthouse of Hope, the recording is there. On next week's show, I'm hoping to find a medical doctor that can maybe tell us a little bit more about it and some of the other things that it could be associated with. So it has been very, very surprising that so many people have experienced this. And if you're thinking you're a man listening to this and you're thinking, oh, was I the only one? No, you weren't. We had lots of either husbands, partners, brothers, fathers concerned about a woman in their lives that they're very close to. So if you're worried that you are the only one, you're not. Many people are concerned about this issue. And what really surprised me about this is that some people didn't realise that if you have intense suicidal thoughts, maybe not just passing fleeting thoughts, but you have very intense thoughts that I don't want to be here, I don't want to live, and start making plans to end your life, that is a sign that you need to seek help immediately. And with all the emails that I got over this, it really surprised me that so many people thought this was normal behaviour. They thought this was a normal part of PMS. And it's normal to feel a bit moody, it's normal to have some pain, but certainly if you're in so much pain that you cannot move, or if you have intense thoughts of suicide, that's a sign that you should probably get this checked out. So if you're not sure what to do about this, I really recommend that you go and see your GP. That leads us nicely on to the topic of suicide prevention. So this is the topic that I'm most passionate about. I spend a lot of my time travelling around New Zealand teaching people about suicide prevention because it is such an important topic. And unfortunately, we have a high suicide rate, and this is something that needs to change. So first of all, I believe that anyone can have a role in suicide prevention. Sometimes we think that, well, you should leave this to the experts, you know, people that really know what they're doing. This should only be left to the psychiatrist. Well, unfortunately, we don't have psychiatrists roaming the streets looking for people that might be suicidal. We don't have patrols 24/7. So the person that is most likely to pick up that someone is suicidal is a family member, a friend, an employer, a teacher. It could be someone like a coach or a pastor or someone like that. And these are people within the community that are most likely to notice this. So it's really important to be aware that although in some cases, yes, you will need expert help, and I'll talk about how to find that a little bit later on, the first people to pick this up might be someone in the community. And that's why I think we need to teach everyone the signs of mental illness and what to do about it. Many people have done a physical first aid course where they will have learned things like what to do if someone has excessive bleeding, if someone suffered a stroke, a heart attack. You'll learn things like that. And the idea of a physical first aid course is that you're not teaching people to be surgeons. You're not teaching people to perform brain surgery or cardiovascular surgery, anything like that. What you are teaching people is the basic steps to keep someone alive until more help arrives. And generally speaking, I think that's the attitude that we need to have with suicide prevention. There are some things that can be quite advanced and quite complicated, and I will talk about that a little bit later on, and some things you most definitely do need an expert to be able to manage this. But it's important to know that anyone in the early stages can pick this up and try and get someone to help. Now, some people will say, you know, I know this is important, but this really scares me, and I don't want to have anything to do with this. And we often like to live in a very comfortable world, but actually sometimes I think we need to be a little bit uncomfortable. For the sake of others, we need to be willing to put ourselves out of our comfort zone to help someone that might be in need. So the biggest thing to look for is often a significant change in behaviour. It can be signs of mental illness or a particular crisis that someone might have gone through. So we'll talk about some of the signs of mental illness. And it's important to know that for some people there will be no signs, for some people they will keep it really hidden, but for other people there are very clear and very visible signs, and we need to be willing to look for those. So one of the first signs of mental illness is, and particularly suicidal behaviour, is actually someone saying very clearly things like, I don't want to live anymore, I don't want to be here, I just can't go on, there's no hope, there's no point. And many of the families that I have worked with that have lost someone to suicide, they've been aware that people have said things like this, and unfortunately they haven't taken it seriously. So if ever you hear anyone say anything along those lines, or anything that you think, oh, I'm not sure about this, this is quite concerning, you should be willing to go up to that person and have a conversation, which I'll talk about in just a moment. Some of the other warning signs can include things like suddenly getting better after a long history of depression. Now, we often think that's a good sign, but if someone suddenly gets better, that's often not a good sign, actually. They've made a decision to end it, and you need to ask them questions. Giving away prized possessions can be one. And a significant change in behaviour. So if you knew that someone used to be very sociable, they used to come to work and they were really well-dressed, and now, you know, they've stopped meeting up with people, they seem to be isolating themselves, or they come to work late and they look really dishevelled, you know, these could all be signs of, well, mental illness, but they could also be signs of suicide. So these are some of the things that we need to look out for. Now, some people would say, oh, I'm not sure, what, you know, if they're not suicidal, will I give them ideas? Well, research is very clear. If someone is not suicidal and you ask them, are you having thoughts about suicide or planning to end your life, that does not give them suicidal thoughts. If someone does have suicidal thoughts and you ask them, it either has no effect on their thoughts, or in most cases it actually reduces them. So anyone can ask this question. So if ever you pick up on some of the warning signs, or you think, oh, I'm not sure about this, and if you're not sure, if you're on the fence, that's a really good time to check. There was someone that said something to me last week, and it was sort of an ambiguous comment, and then I went back to him a day later and I said, just a second, I just want to check what you said, because I wasn't sure about this. And he was fine with me asking and happy that I did check in, but you should check out things, even if you think someone's not serious. Someone once said to me, very apparently jokingly and laughingly, oh, I'm going to kill myself now. And I was almost certain this was a joke. But I stopped and I said, just a minute, I just want to be clear. You just said to me, you want to kill yourself. Do you really mean that? And she stopped laughing. And she said, yes, yes I do. I found out she'd planned to end her life that night. Now, we often assume that if someone's laughing, that'll be a sign that they're happy or not taking things seriously. But it's also important to know that sometimes laughter can be a sign of nervousness or fear. Sometimes when people are really anxious, they laugh. So if ever you pick up some of these warning signs and you're not sure and you think, I'm just not sure about this, you should explicitly ask someone, are you planning to end your life? Or are you planning to kill yourself? You don't want to beat around the bush, and you also don't want to say, are you planning to harm yourself? Because that can mean self-harm, which is not necessarily a suicide attempt. So you should explicitly ask, are you planning to kill yourself? Now, we don't mind if someone says no. We're probably all comfortable with that. We can breathe a sigh of relief. But if someone does say yes, that can be very scary. And you might think that the fact that I've done this many times means that I'm over that fear and I can do this easily. No, I still get nervous when I have to ask that question. I think if someone does say yes, it's really important to validate their emotion. So don't say, oh, that's stupid. Why would you do that? You've got so much to live for. Instead, you should say something along the lines of, I am so glad you told me that. Because that person's probably just opened up to you about something really big and they weren't sure whether they should have told you. Some people say, well, what if they cry? Well, they cry and you get out the tissues. We need to be getting better at managing people and being around people that are uncomfortable. It's okay if people cry. They're expressing their emotions. It's all right. So if they do say yes, if they're in immediate danger of death or serious harm, you need to call 111 immediately. And even if they don't want you to, they're probably not thinking straight. I've only ever had to call 111 on 3 people. At the time, they were not very happy about this. They all said, you effing, how dare you? However, one of them thanked me that night, one of them thanked me about a week later, and one of them thanked me a couple of months later. So actually, long term, they will be grateful. So if someone is in danger of death or serious injury, you need to get help immediately. The other thing you need to do is assess your safety. Now, I've asked hundreds of people this question, and I've never thought that anyone was going to harm me, but you can't take that for granted. If you do think that this person is actually likely to harm you, unfortunately, you need to get out of there. If you're hurt or injured, you can't help anyone, so you need to get out of there immediately and call for help. However, if the person says, I do have suicidal thoughts, and if you ask, when are you planning to do this? If they say, a couple of months, then obviously you need less support. But if they say something like, I'm planning to do it in the next hour or tonight, you need to get them immediate help. Now, I can't talk you through this exactly because there's people listening from all over the world, actually, to the show. I found out I've got listeners all over the place, which I didn't know about. So I can't exactly talk you through a safety plan in detail for your area. But the important thing to know is that if someone says, yes, they're planning to die, and yes, they're planning to do it in the immediate future, you need to get that person help. So for some people, it might be taking them to a GP, a regular GP. For other people, it might be taking them to the emergency department or the emergency room at the hospital. And basically, your response needs to be in proportion to the risk of serious harm. So if they say they're likely to hurt themselves that day, you need to act. It doesn't matter if you've got meetings afterwards or anything like that. A person's life is far more important than whatever you've got planned. Cancel it, postpone it, whatever. Stay with that person until more help arrives. Now, I know many people get into this situation and they think, I know I was told all this, I just can't remember what to do. If you ever have someone in front of you and they've just said, yes, I want to kill myself, and you don't know what to do, it's important to know that you're not alone. So if you are anywhere around the world, you can Google suicide hotline. And if you have someone in front of you that's suicidal, you can call them and ask them, this person's just said yes, what should I do? Like, where can I take them? What can I do? If you're in New Zealand, you can either call Youthline or Lifeline, and they can talk you through how to help someone. But the big message is, don't leave them alone until more help arrives. You do need to make some sort of safety plan with them. So you need to get them to some sort of supporting person or professional that can help them. And if you ever ring someone up and they say, yes, we'll see you, we'll put you on an 8 to 12 week wait list, and it's heartbreaking when that happens, it's important to know that there's other help out there. So, for example, in Christchurch, where a lot of the listeners are, there's between 700 and 900 different social services. So there is a heck of a lot of help out there. There's also at least 1,300 GPs and at least 1,000 counsellors. So if the first person that you go to says, oh, I'm sorry, we can't help you, we won't see you, we're too busy, or anything like that, be stubborn and go to the next person. In some cases, stubbornness is a very undervalued quality. But basically, if you think someone is in danger, you need to get them help. And if the first person says, we can't help you, keep on trying. When I've had suicidal people in front of me, I've said this with all sincerity. If I have to take you to all 700 to 900 different social services in Christchurch before we can find you someone that will help, I will do that. The most I've ever had to take someone to is about 7 or 8 services, but it's important to know that you need to keep trying. The other thing that's important to know for you is that there is help, and people can make a difference. Now, for some people, depression will be a lifelong condition, but it can always be managed and at least improved. That's the very least. And for other people, actually, depression is a mental illness that is curable. It's not a terminal illness. Now, we do talk a lot about the link between depression and suicide, and yes, certainly there is a strong link there, but there are also other mental illnesses that can play a role. For example, anxiety, and particularly panic disorder. The other one that we don't talk a lot about, but it is a significant risk factor, is psychosis. Psychosis is basically disordered thinking, and in colloquial terms, I guess you could say the person has lost touch with reality. So they might hear voices that aren't there, they might see people that aren't there, they might act very irrationally, they might fear that they're being persecuted by someone when that's not the case. Obviously, if they owe a gang money, you know, that's legitimate. But if they feel like they're being persecuted for someone that it isn't, these could all be signs of psychosis. Sometimes people think that they're in a game, and often I find people actually pretty good at picking up the signs of psychosis. Like, they pick up the fact that this person is weird or unusual, but they don't know what to do about it. So we often teach people to look for signs of depression, where people feel sad, where they look down, where they look miserable. And yes, absolutely, that can be a risk factor for some people. But for other people, some people actually look very happy, but it's an erratic happiness. It's not grounded in reality. And if ever you see signs like that, especially if it's a full-blown psychotic episode, it's important to know that that is a medical emergency and you need to get someone help immediately. I now want to talk more generally. So in the past, we've had this idea of suicide prevention as being rescuing someone from the edge of a cliff. And in some cases, that is absolutely necessary and we need to do that. But I think we need to have a dramatic rethink of the way that we look at suicide prevention. To me, suicide prevention is making sure that people don't get into a bad situation in the first place. And so it's stopping people getting to the point of crisis. And I think that's incredibly important. In order to do this, I think there's a couple of things that are really important. In this country, we focus a lot on teen suicide, and that is a tragedy. But actually, the biggest risk group for suicide is white males aged 45 to 65. So we often wonder why the suicide rate doesn't change when we only focus on teen suicide. But actually, we need to focus on some of the biggest risk groups, and particularly white males middle-aged. That's often a really big risk group. So there's a couple of things that you can do. Support people that you know that are in that time of life. It can often be a very difficult time of life. And unfortunately, in the Western world, we often define our worth by what we do. Now, I know a lot of people are really annoyed at that, but unfortunately, that's the way it is. Often when you meet someone for the first time, you ask them, what do you do? And that shows that the thing that you want to know most about them is their job. And I think for a lot of middle-aged men, they know that retirement is coming up, and they think, well, that's it. I don't have any point anymore. You know, I've lost my purpose in life. And so we need to be very clear that people can have meaning and value to their lives, even if they're not working. So there's a couple of things that can be really helpful. We know that strong friendships dramatically decrease the chances of someone dying by suicide. So making an extra effort to go and see someone can be really important. We also know that volunteering can be really helpful. If people take part in a community event or volunteer or things like that, we know that that can help give them a sense of purpose. So if you know that there's someone that is quite concerned that retirement is actually not going to be a good time, that's it, their life's over and all their purpose and meaning is finished, you can encourage them to get involved in some sort of community event. There's one finding that I think everyone should know about. Just take a moment to think to yourselves, when do you think the happiest time in your life is likely to be? A lot of people would say in your 20s or in your 30s, and then after that, life pretty much goes downhill. Well, you might be surprised to know that many studies have found that actually the time in your life when you're probably the happiest is your 70s. That surprises a lot of people, but that's a message that we need to give to lots of people, and I think that should give people hope that actually when you finish working, your life isn't over, you're not pointless, you're not a burden on society, but actually that could be the happiest time of your life. And I think one of the simplest things that we can do to prevent suicide is be people of hope. I call this show Lighthouse of Hope for a reason. You know, unfortunately, we live in a very dark world where there can be all these negative stories and all these terrible, terrible things that are going on in the world. Often when you read the newspaper or look online, you know, there's all these stories. There's another financial crisis coming. The world is ending. Everything is going wrong. But actually, that is not the case at all. We have many reasons to be hopeful. In the 1970s, it was predicted that we're going to face an environmental catastrophe, that hundreds of millions of people are going to starve to death in Europe. We're not going to be able to produce enough food for them. Well, as you know, that didn't quite turn out. Now, obviously, climate change is a really important topic. Obviously, we need to look after the planet. But there's actually good news with some of this stuff. We're inventing new technologies all the time that are far cleaner and far more environmentally friendly. And so many of the problems, yes, they are terrible problems, but I believe that human beings are clever and we can actually address and solve some of these problems. My wife and I bought an electric car recently. It's just one simple thing that hopefully will reduce carbon emissions. We're now starting to reduce the amount of plastic that we're using. So I think there is a reason to be hopeful about this stuff. And often scientists predict that, oh, the world's ending in 10 years. Well, they've been predicting that for a long time, but it hasn't happened yet. So I think we need to be people of hope. There are so many stories of hope that I've seen, and we need to share these. When I tell people that I've worked with young people with mental illness and that have been suicidal, their face drops. And some people think that I've got the worst job in the entire world. And some people think that this must, you know, really emotionally destroy me. People have said this to my face, that must make you really screwed up yourself, mustn't it? But actually, it's the most joyful job that I've ever had, because sometimes I've met people on what will probably be the worst day of their entire lives. I've seen people tell me there's no hope, nothing can get any better. And yet the overwhelming majority of people with the right help can get better. And quite often I'll catch up with people a year later, 2 years later, and just meet them in the street or something like that. And it amazes me that so many of them are actually doing much, much better. I recently ran into someone that many people would have said this person had no hope and they were not doing very well when I met them, and lots of things had gone wrong and they didn't want to live and they'd made several suicide attempts. And I caught up with them recently and they were so happy. Things were going so well for them. And we need to share stories of hope, because I see this all the time. I see hope. There is a lot of it out there. And I think one of the simplest things that we can do to overcome suicide is to give people hope. We also know that, you know, financial worries can be a huge issue for people. And many people worry that if they lose a lot of money, that's it, they're finished. But a lot of people can actually lose big sums of money and recover. We often think that things are much worse than they are. There's a very interesting study done in the 90s, and they looked at people that had had a serious car crash and had a limb amputated. And you might think, well, that would ruin their lives forever. Oh, something that terrible would just be a disaster. And immediately after the crash, these people had huge bouts of depression. They felt incredibly down, and they were very, very upset about this. But 18 months later, the overwhelming majority were actually back to the same happiness that they had before. And I think we need to tell people about studies like this, because we often think that bad events are going to ruin our lives. But actually, what scientists know is that generally speaking, your happiness will actually go back to normal after a major negative event. Now, there obviously are some exceptions with this, and this is where, you know, potentially we need counselling and medication and things like this. But actually, for most people, their happiness will not be destroyed forever. There is hope. So one other simple thing that you can do to try and prevent suicide is to share stories of hope, because there are so many out there and more people need to hear them. That's all we have time for on the show. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home.